from the Localization Fireside Chat, and we're having another recording today. And thanks for joining me for this episode, episode, I think, 148 or 149. I've done 4 or 5 podcast recording today, so I lost count. So forgive me if I don't quote the number correctly. Today, I have the honor and the distinct pleasure to rejoin my good friend, Mauricio Espina. Mauricio, I've met him before. We've talked before. I even visited in your office before, and I shook hands with you at your office. I can't remember. It's downtown Toronto, but Mauricio works for the, I'll let him introduce himself, but he works for the province of Ontario. He's in charge of export development for a specific territory, U.S. and Latin America, with a focus on Latin America as a destination for Canadian companies who are interested in exporting their services and their goods to those territory. Mauricio, thank you for joining the conversation today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Robin. Congratulations on your 89th recording. I work for the Ontario Ministry of Economic Development, Job Creation and Trade, or for the Ontario government. And in my capacity, in my division, we help companies export. And as you point out, I cover the U.S. and the Americas, actually, for the tech sector. That's my job.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? This is thanks for the clarification. I really appreciate that. And thanks for the context. Before we get start into the topic of the hour is the export development for the Americas from the tech sector in Canada. Why don't we start with this? On this channel, we always say everybody's got a story. So why don't we start with your story? What is your story, if you don't mind sharing with the audience?
Sure. I mean, I came here as an immigrant, like many of us, many people, but I didn't come with any post-secondary education or even English or money. So I came with a high school diploma, no English and no post-secondary education. And I just started working. I wanted to work in a factory, but because I didn't speak English even for a factory, I actually ended up cleaning floors for almost 4 years. But I made myself up. I studied here. I worked in the corporate sector, in the educational sector, and in the government, in international business development. So, I mean, I feel the pain for entrepreneurs when they suffer, but I also share on their successes when they make it.
Thank you for that. I guess we share the same story. I am an immigrant as well. I landed in this country with $50 in my pocket, lots of hopes, but that's it. And dream, and $50 in my pocket. It's pretty interesting where we are right now. And you know, thank God for Canada and the country that welcomed, immigrants such as yourself and myself, because it feels to me that a country that allowed us to build ourselves, I came here at a young age. I'm not sure how old were you when you came in, but I came in, I was like 19, 20 years old when I showed up here. And lots of hopes and lots of dreams, but not much to go on more than that. That's it. And I didn't speak English when I first came in. So I'm like you. I adopted English as a third language when I came into this country, but that's it. From your side now, from where you are, how do you feel about where we are? And from an economy perspective, from what you're hearing from your government colleagues or from your customers, which they are the tech sector in Ontario, what is the mood like?
Well, the mood like is one of expectations, optimism, and uncertainty. I think like all Ontarians or Canadians, we know that circumstances have changed, but as usual, we will adapt. And it's that resilience that entrepreneurs and immigrant entrepreneurs and any Canadian for that matter, living in the cold climate that sometimes we live, we adapt, we have to adapt. And so you've seen some of the numbers, and employment is not as bad as we would have thought 2 years ago. Investments in the tech sector, even though some people talk about perhaps changing circumstances, there is continued interest, even from the U.S., in investing in tech companies. And we are being forced, our tech companies are being forced to look not just at the U.S., but other markets as well. Thank God we have so many free trade agreements in place that we can take advantage of.
And those trade agreements, can you specify which countries they're with?
Well, yeah, my gosh. We have trade agreements right now, in Canada, that is covering 51 countries, because some of those free trade agreements cover more than one country, such as the one with the EU, the European Union, or CUSMA, or NAFTA, as we used to call it before. But with 51 countries, that's quite a bit. And our team, which is in charge of export development, takes advantage of that by targeting those particular markets not just the US, but also all around the world.
Mauricio, I got to ask you this. In Ontario, what does the tech sector, in your opinion, the one that you deal with, represent in terms of either the size of the economy in the province or the number of companies in the province, however you want to measure this? I'm not trying to put you on the spot, by the way.
No, that's a fair question. Well, that's a really good, very good question. We don't know how many tech companies the province boasts, but we have easily over 25,000 tech companies. That is approximately 40% of all the tech companies in Canada. And the good thing is that Ontario boasts national dominance in all sectors, from microelectronics, from the legacy in Kitchener-Waterloo, companies like DALSA and others, to telecommunications in Ottawa from Nortel Legacy, to everything in Toronto, from companies that are in fintech, Toronto being the global center for finances and financial technology in Canada, to cybersecurity. We are global champions. So we have everything, more than 25,000 companies and more than 400,000 employees in that industry.
And Mauricio, so that's great. I always heard that Toronto specifically has over 60% of head offices of Canada in the city of Toronto. Now, from those numbers, those massive amount of numbers of tech companies that are in Ontario, I want to ask you, the question is, how many of those do you work with? Obviously, you can't work with 25,000 of them. There's too many to handle. But how many of them, and what qualifies them for your division to be involved with them?
Yes, thank you. We help approximately 1,000 companies from different sectors every year. The companies that qualify are based in Ontario, and with a knowledge-based product or service. So a software technology, that is, advanced manufacturing, aerospace, those are the type of sectors that we cover and we help those companies. Every year we take on our programs. Let me just back up. I'll get into the programs later, but to make it short, about 1,000 companies are assisted by our team every year, which is quite a bit. It's like 20 of us only, less than 20.
And when we say assist, Mauricio, can you clarify what that is?
We help them export. We provide them with the tools that they need to succeed. Now, whether they use them or not, that's a different case. But we have three particular programs that we utilize in our export toolkit.
And what are these programs?
Well, the first one is what you would think is consulting. Hey, I want to open an office. Or who do I talk to if I want to go to Paris? What are the issues in the Netherlands? I cannot ship my goods across in the UK. Or who should I talk to? Consulting, export services. The second one, we bring buyers from, that is, large companies that are interested in acquiring Ontario technology. Case in point, just in last September, I brought 5 global companies. 3 of them came in person to Toronto. We had close to about 100 Ontario companies in attendance. And we arranged 49 meetings with those companies. So incoming buyers. The third program, it's trade missions. We take companies to market via trade missions. Case in point, in 2 weeks, I will be taking 20 companies to the US at CES in Las Vegas. Robin, I lost you. You are muted.
How about now?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. So out of the 25,000 companies around Ontario, what is the qualification for one company to say, hey, you know, I want to be part of your program? Is there like a gate to go through, or can anybody apply? How does that work?
Anybody can apply, but of course we want to double check the companies. There is also a little, you know, simple questionnaire that we ask them. But really it comes down to this. Are you based in Ontario? Are your employees and the IP that you have developed in Ontario? And we would like it if they're going to more exotic markets, I don't know, let's say the Middle East, we want to make sure that they already have existing clients, not just in Canada, but even in the US for that matter.
Okay.
Bragging rights.
Okay. Now, when you take a look at a company, like in 5 minutes, you know, just from speaking to a company in about 5 minutes, what tells you they are ready for international expansion or not? Like, you can pretty much determine immediately if these guys are ready for marketing expansion.
Well, so
how do you determine that?
When an executive tells you, yes, I can export anywhere in the world and I have 5 employees, you know that you can't. I mean, you and I know that it takes money to make money. It takes constant visit to the market. And so we listen well when a company, when a person, for that matter, is focused. When they say, I want to export to Mexico because I've seen it, I studied, I actually hired one person that speaks the language, so I can, they can help me with the follow-up, and I put a little bit of money aside to go back and forth. Then you know they're serious.
And from your perspective, like, I mean, that's quite the journey you've had, right? So, I mean, from, you know, coming to Canada to doing this, and we all came to Canada with hopes and dreams, but how did you get pulled into the international markets and in the first place? Like, I mean, how did you get into it to begin with?
But I came here as an adult already. I was 24 years old. And as I said, I didn't speak the language. And I was working in a factory because I couldn't even work in a factory. So I ended up cleaning floors for 3.5 years. And then I made myself up. I studied here. I carried the student debt for a while until I paid it off. But how? I think it's just the same trajectory, the same road map that we develop, as whether we are leading a company or whether we are leading our own life, and that is focus and persistence. And I knew I always wanted to work in this sector, in international trade, working for or representing a government. So when we talk about focus, focus can be corporate, can be personal, but in that way, very focused and you know, with the specific steps that you take. So I started international business after many trials. They told me I couldn't do it, but then I ended up graduating top class at Seneca and then Ryerson, TMU now, and then U of T. I studied a little bit of telecommunications, but it was just that, you know, applying myself. The same thing that we tell our companies and you tell your clients, focus, 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 and perseverance.
True, true, true. And you know, when you look at these companies, and, you know, everybody now, there is a startup community, there is a incubation communities. Do you get involved at the startup level with these communities, or you just wait for them to become like solid and then you get involved?
Well, actually, no. I am not judged to say you have a good product or a bad product. If they have a product and they have some budget to go after it, particularly in the US, it's somewhat easier to get them started. So we would take, particularly in the US, I would take younger companies. In other markets, you want them a bit more sophisticated with existing clients, with a client roster that speaks highly about the company. They need to know that they need the funding to go back and forth. But in the US, we tend to do that. Now, talk about the incubators. We have plenty of incubators here. We have more than 150 in Toronto alone. All kinds of incubators, from textiles to food and tech, and offering different services. So we have that tremendous ecosystem that continues to pump out more companies, not just tech.
So which is very tremendous, and I didn't know we have, I mean, I already know probably maybe two or three. I don't know there is over 100 incubators in the city or in Ontario in general. Is there a list somewhere where we can find this information?
I mean, I know that I there's got to be a list somewhere. I know it
because yeah.
I did
okay.
a bit of research.
Because you're involved in it, right?
Exactly. So I know that there's over 100 incubators in Toronto alone. And again, incubators can be a couple from a university, private sector, part of a Scotia Bank.
Or Mars Network could be an incubator, right? I mean, I'm assuming.
Right. So and then the most renowned incubators, of course, I would count Mars and of course, TMU or Ryerson, which is supposed to be one of the best in the world.
Yep. So for Canadian audience or non-Canadian audience who are listening to this episode, and we got a lot of listeners, fortunately for our episode now, we're averaging almost 1,200 downloads on audio and close to 10,000 views on YouTube per episode, which is great.
Very good.
Now, for people who are listening and they're saying, okay, so this is good. In your observation, what is the biggest mistake that Canadian companies in the stage where they are, small to medium, and they want to export to the US, they make when they start thinking about selling to the US? What is the biggest misconception or mistake, however you want to qualify?
There are several. One is because I sell to the US, to a subsidiary of a US firm in Canada, I can sell to the parent in the US. That's a big one. Not really. It's different purchasing teams, different people. You have to go through the same channels, business development trips. Another one would be, yes, the US makes decision fast. So I'm just going to go and I don't even need to go. Wrong. You actually should pay constant visit to the market because the small decisions, you don't need to be to travel. But for the big decisions, the Americans need to see you eye to eye. Do I like this
That's
person?
Right.
Do they
That's
have
right.
the wife? I have a good feeling about them. Those are two major misconceptions when selling to the US.
And what do you think of, like, I see a lot of people, they enter the market without any research. They just jump in and they don't do like market data analysis. They don't really get to know what works in the US versus what should work in Canada, etc. They just blindly, you know, just go in and say, oh, it's a bigger market, I got to go sell more.
Well, you know what, that's the basics of any company. And let me just expand on what you said, because it's quite important. When somebody has a product and they say, I created a product, they have to buy it? Not really. Because if you haven't been able to sell the product and you've tried and tried and tried, some people get exasperated and they get upset and they say, how come they don't see the value of this product? Maybe there is no market for it. We got to accept that sometimes.
That's right. So I don't know if I told you this, but a few months ago, I started my own consulting firm, N49 Networks, north of 49, that's Canada. And I focus on commercialization and revenue development for small to medium enterprise. Because I knew, I've been dealing with this for many years. I've done, I don't know how many trade missions with various governments. And I come to it from an experience point of view where companies are either inside of the country here in Canada wants to go out and expand their markets, and there are a few pieces missing. And, you know, not, and to back to your question, to your comment, I worked with many engineering teams where they think, oh, it's good, it's cool, let's develop something, but nobody knows if there is a market for it or not. So it's good to develop something, and it's creative to develop something. And I'm always reminded, you mentioned telecom earlier, there was an incident, I got to tell this to the audience. There was an incident back in the days where a few engineers came to me and they want to buy a testing system. I was in the fiber optic testing business. And they said, okay, we're going to buy this testing system. I said, for what? They're developing something like a massive telecom card that goes onto a switch, into a telecom switch. Massive. And I said, okay, well, I'll sell you the testing bed. So I did, quite a lot of money. So anyway, I said, okay, at the end, what are you going to do with this? And I'm going to sell it. All right. So I kept a track of it because it was unusually large card that goes, never been developed before, that goes into a switch, into a telecom switch. Now, down the road, I asked the chief development officer for this, were you able to sell this? They said, yeah. Well, I mean, we went to do a presentation for one of the largest telecom, I don't want to name any names, one of the largest telecom in the country. And the answer from the vice president that was in the room watching this episode of presentation, he said, look, you mean to tell me I can take one of these cards, I'll put it in Winnipeg, and with a third of its capacity, I'll cover the entire Canadian internet traffic. So how many of those are you going to sell? So the question is not because you can develop it is good news. The question is how many of those are you going to sell?
Two or three. That's it. You're done.
So here is a company that spent, I think it's like $50 million developing this, and they were able to sell one unit.
I get it. Crazy. Yeah, I mean, that speaks, I mean, great of the innovative mind that we have, but also sometimes we need to look at the business basics. Is this scalable? Is this sustainable? Is there enough market for it? Or am I just simply building something because I believe in it?
And a lot of times, you know, when we say like think global, and I don't know about you when you talk to these companies that you work with, think global mean, you know, even though that you are a company in Barrie, Ontario, and you're developing something from that city, it doesn't mean necessarily that it's going to work everywhere you go in the markets outside of Barrie or outside of Canada for that reason. But at the inception level, at the creation level of this company, if you're thinking global, then you have a higher chance of success. But if you are thinking about it from a, oh, you know, me and my buddies created some idea in the local region where we are, and automatically you think it's going to work in Spain, for instance. Not necessarily true.
Not necessarily true. And I mean, and not necessarily true. And the best, I mean, you and I know where the insurance sector was created in Ontario. It's in London. A lot of the insurance companies were based there because of the high migration and refugees and so on. And it's also a good testing bed for new financial and insurance products. But just because it was created, again, I don't want to repeat, but just because you have a great idea and you don't have a reference client, that you need that. You need that reference client, ideally local, but then you need to probably adapt some of the offerings in another country, whether it's the language, whether it's the way that you present it. But it's very common for not just Canadian entrepreneurs, but any entrepreneur to simply think they have to buy it as is. Not really.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we talk a lot about, are you ready to export and product readiness? You know, I've dealt with this quite a bit in the language industry. You know, when somebody says to me, You know, we do have a product. We're exporting about 20 countries, but everything is in English. I'm thinking, really? Everything is in English? Like, does your customer speak English? Well, they understand English. Well, are they comfortable with English? So that goes into that whole product readiness.
And there are plenty of examples. Plenty of examples. I mean, plenty of examples where we think that a product that we develop is going to take. Like, I mean, think of Segways. Remember Segway?
Right.
It was supposed to be the product that would change our way of transporting. Well, now it's relegated to an indoor mall or something. That's it. So that's it. That lack of adaptiveness that we sometimes fail. I mean, not we, but entrepreneurs.
That's right.
But there are also great examples of entrepreneurs here. I mean, a case in point, the company Apply Board, international students, I believe from Iran, they came as international students and they found it so onerous to go through the process to apply that they decided to create a company that just does. And they are a global champion in international enrollment. How? Why? Because they went through the process. Mm-hmm. Or think of Touch Bistro, my friend Alex Barroti.
Yeah, Touch Bistro, yeah.
Alex, yeah. So he is an serial entrepreneur. He created a couple of online companies and he sold them and so on. But while in vacation, he ordered something from the bar and it took too long. So he asked the owner, why is it taking so long? And the owner told him, Alex, it's because my servers have to remember to take the order. They write it here. They go inside the punchline and sometimes they forget. And he created Touch Bistro that just that. And the process, I don't know how many people, for restaurants around the globe. So anyways, all those little problems that we face every day are also a potential for innovation, for new companies.
Correct. What about partnerships? Sometimes like going direct is one way. So you got to go direct and hire sales team and, you know, create sales structure, go to market structure in the target market that you're going in. Sometimes you go in and you just say, okay, I don't want to do any of this. I want to form a partnership. Do you see this in your line of work?
I apologize.
Yeah, it's okay.
Absolutely. And not just in the US, but on any market. But let me just make a good example on non-US markets. Let's take Mexico, for example, where relationships are developed and they take over time. Those partners, integrators or resellers are critical. There are countries, including, for example, Mexico and others, that don't really tend to develop a lot of technology. They buy it from overseas, from Canada or from whatever other country. But they have all those local connections, which we don't. And so having a partner like that, an integrator, a rep, an agent that opens the door, it's critical. And we have to be open to that idea.
Yeah. Now, what about this whole idea, you know, the tariffs and the economic environment between us and the U.S. and all that stuff? How is that affecting things?
Well, you and I and your listeners follow the news. We are on standby. We continue to be positive and we would simply continue to do our thing. The companies that I deal with, they haven't really said, I stop selling to the US. No. Maybe in some markets when they target government procurement opportunities in the US, that could be imposed. I cannot give you any numbers or any specifics, but it would be probably natural to assume that. But for private sector purchases, that continues. I mean, I haven't heard anything negative about that.
Yeah, so it's business as usual in some cases, right?
The U.S. is a market we simply cannot ignore. We have to maintain that presence. However, every time that you open the newspaper, you see headlines, government and other countries say, yes, we are open to doing business with Canada, or Canadians saying the same thing. One thing is to say that, and another one is to really get and convince our Ontario exporters, let's do it. We have all these programs in place. We take them to market. We have all these tools available at a fraction of the cost if they were doing it on their own. But they have to come to us.
Yeah. So they have to go to you, right?
Well, we partner with the federal government in doing these activities, but we do the vast majority of trade missions by far. So they come with us because it lowers their risk and it lowers their cost, and potentially it enhances their reach in the market. In March, I'll be taking 10 companies to Chile. We already started working on securing companies in December because January and February are holidays in Chile. And so by the end of December, I will know the potential success factor for these 10 companies. And then we can finalize and then we go in March. So we work like that. We tend to work.
Yeah, I did some business in Chile. It's a pretty good country.
It's the most clear country and the closest to other than the US in terms of the closeness in terms of economic activities and relationships with Canada. We do have a free trade agreement with them as well.
How does, Mauricio, in your opinion, the FX rate, the currency exchange rate, affect us negatively or positively? Depends on the region, obviously.
Well, you remember during, was it 25 years ago, the Canadian dollar was trading at 62 cents or maybe even 60 cents. We're not hedgers. We can't, that's not something we can control, but it does affect the companies. And some of the companies, the larger companies, do have a hedging department, but we just can't control that. It affects them, of course, when the dollar is very low. It's hard to sell, but that's something we can't control.
So I know you've taken a lot of Trade Mission, and I received your email notification on Trade Mission. Thanks for including me in your email broadcast, by the way. And I hope one day I should be able to join you if you're okay with that. And I don't know what I need to do to become part of your delegation, but I'm on the commercialization side. I'm not on the actually creating tech. I help tech company find dollars and find revenue and market. So if that's an opportunity down the road, we can talk about it later. Have you seen delegations that goes with you on a trade mission and they get different results? Some of them, they go in and they're actively engaged, because I've been involved in many of those, actively engaged. They attend meetings. They have follow-ups, the legwork, if you will. And some of them, they go in there, they just go attend, they go to the bars or something. They go as a tourist.
Selling internationally, I know, I've been in the private sector as well. It's like dating. If you put the effort, you have more chances of success.
So have you seen people succeed and see people like they just go have fun?
Well, they don't necessarily go to have fun, but they don't do their follow-up. I've had foreign companies. I remember a case in Point in Atlanta, and a company in Georgia called me and they said, look, I've been trying to reach out to this company, one of your clients, you brought them here 3 months ago. I send emails, no response.
Nobody responded.
I had to call them and they say, oops, we forgot, we got busy. So
what's your advice?
On the other hand, I've had companies that are so incredibly focused. You remember Polar Mobile?
Oh, yes, I know Polar, yes.
So Kunal and I went to on a trade mission in the US a few years ago. When he was just started, he had 2 employees. And then when we came back, he said, Mauricio, and remember what he does. They have the software that enables us to watch news in our phone. That's, he was one of the pioneers in that. And I remember he was telling me, look, I have so many business cards. I don't know what to do. So much follow-up. And I said, look, Kunal, market is where? You know where it is. It's New York. So he focused in New York. And a few months passed, and I asked him to give me some feedback. And then a few months later, he said to me, look, my first client in the U.S. took me 6 months to close. And after 29 trips to the U.S., I didn't know if I had that client or not. It was the New York client, the New York Times. So think about 6 months, 29 trips. And he didn't know if he had the business or not. Talked about, and this is just New York around the corner.
Yeah. You bring up a very valid point. It's called the long sales cycle. And, most of these things are long sales cycle. Nobody going in. I never been into a trade mission, and I probably used to do like 2 or 3 of them per year, where I walk into a trade mission, I'm thinking like, I'm going to come back with a handful of purchase orders. It never happens. But what it does, though, it puts you on the map. It opens the door, it puts you on the map, on the radar of your potential customers. Now, what is your advice for people before they get on the plane? What is your advice for companies who are interested in participating in Trade Mission to have in place before they even think about applying anything?
It all depends on the components of a Trade Mission. But of course, the first thing would be research the market. Second, reach out to the potential clients in that market. The third one, tell us, we arrange B2B meetings for the company so they can be part of that. Sometimes, especially in non-US markets, we have more influence to set up those meetings and thirdly, develop a follow-up strategy. I'll give you an example. In 2 weeks, I said I'm taking 20 companies to see. I've encouraged all the companies to bring 2 or 3 people, but to have them divide and conquer. We are at a trade show, actually, that is the main core of the program, but there are other activities. And I did say, look, send them as if they haven't been fed in a week. Have one person at the show, talking to everybody, not talking to the other exhibitors or to their colleagues, everybody. Another one going to conferences and one more going to the other exhibitors, and then rotate them, have a little competition and ensure that, ensure that they're not talking to each other, because especially in the US, you know how I know if a person is American? Because they're so a bit aggressive, assertive, you maybe a better word, because they are right on the aisles of the trade show talking to everybody. And we got to be like,
that's right. They want to cut through the noise. They don't want fluff.
That's it. And then it's a quick qualification, exchange business cards, and then follow up after. And then go for,
because I was going to ask you, you know, what is the, how do you coach these founders or these entrepreneurs on refining their pitch when it comes to their US versus Latin America, for instance?
We are,
the US is one thing, but Latin America is completely different.
Yes, and actually we do regularly education sessions on that precisely, on the importance. I mean, I'll give you an example. I was in Mexico. I took 7 companies in November. And one of the things that I had to emphasize was download WhatsApp. Download WhatsApp. You're going to need it for everything. It was right after that that they realized, yes, WhatsApp I need it for, because they keep sending me stuff only on WhatsApp. And I mean, it's just a thing for them.
Yeah.
So yes, also the personal relationship. We attended a launch by a major bank that invited us. We arranged that. And that launch was 7 hours long. 7 hours long. We met at 2:30 and we left at 9:30 p.m. But during that launch, he started to call several of his contacts to have lunch and dinner at that time with some of our companies. And the key people that he brought in were really influential and good for the businesses. But you had to be willing to be there 7 hours.
Hey, tell me, I know you mentioned like a couple of instances where diaspora, for instance, communities play a role in accelerating the adoption of certain entrepreneur solutions, product services, etc. You mentioned the Iranian one. But how does it in general create some sort of an advantage in the international business building?
I think, I mean, I gave an example earlier about a company that, let's say, has 5 employees and they're so serious that they actually hire somebody that speaks the language for that target region. And that's one example. We have a tremendous immigration in Canada, highly educated as well. In many of instances, they speak the language already. So that's a really untapped potential for large companies or medium-sized companies to work with them, to hire them, to help them develop those markets. That's one aspect. The other one is that they maintain those relationships, business relationships, in the country where they come from. So probably it happened to you. It didn't happen to me, but it happened to many people. They have work experience in X country. They come to Canada and they can maintain and develop that relationship.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's very important to maintain those relationships. If you have them, why burn these bridges, right?
Well, why burn the bridges in general? I mean, right now we are facing, Canada is facing different threats from different players around the world, different opportunities as well. And so that multicultural card, it's well played, has to be well played. And particularly Toronto with, you know, the most diverse city in the world, we have to keep playing that card.
One of the things, I guess, I mean, it's evident here in Canada or North America in general, like when the newcomer comes in and they've got a founder idea, they've got an idea, it's an entrepreneur going to get started. Most institutions probably will not give them a break, or they will not give them a chance to get started, to get moving. Do you help in that? Like, I mean, I know we're both immigrants here, but...
Right. No, we don't. We don't have programs as such, but the government funds incubators that can help them develop and fine-tune their business idea. And so through they're getting indirect funding. But we don't. Our branch, no, it doesn't.
Yeah, like because it's a dilemma, right? So they want to sound, you know, they trustworthy. They don't have any historical activities in the country to pitch that or to help them pitch that. And so you've got great ideas. They've got a market. They've got, you know, they've got some investment money, but they're looking for somebody to help them take it to the next level. And for instance, if you go into a bank asking for money to get started, you're less likely to get money from the bank.
Right. I mean, and that's a dilemma. I mean, I said before, and you and I know it, it takes money to make money. And so the best advice that I would give, and I do it because I am very involved with the Latin Hispanic community, is start small and start getting the small clients locally. I mean, you remember the what was the name of those? There are so many examples, but the beans that you put in your neck you know, the lady that started that business in the U.S., she started selling them at craft and in the corner store, in the local fairs and so on. And she grew that tremendously. But she started small, like everybody else. You have to start somewhere. Start small, sell to the friends, and start the word of mouth. And then at one point, go to a small retail store and start there. You got to start somewhere. Don't give up.
Yeah, don't give up. As we come close here, I got to get a couple of more questions for you. Just think about that from your own perspective. The Ontario tech sector was a CEO listening to wants to grow the Americas and in the 2026. What would be the first move?
Think long term. I think you said it. Think long term. I mean, there are challenges ahead, but any other investment, it's an investment. Like any other investment, be it real estate or so on. Think long term. I mean, who would have thought that AI would be receiving the amount of capital it's receiving today? And of course, yes, I know that there are calls about, you know, the potential difficulties ahead, but whoever hits first tends to hit harder.
Mm. And my second one is, what do you wish Ontarian, when they're talking about international expansion, you wish people would stop arguing with? You're laughing.
Because,
I got you.
There's so many, but I'll just
because just one.
Just because they're so timely. Stop complaining about the weather. It's only 3 months.
Stop complaining about the weather.
It's only three months. 2 months if you think about it.
The second thing is, where can people find you and connect with you?
Yes. So we have a calendar online. It's called ontario.ca/trade calendar, or simply Google Trade Calendar Government of Ontario. And you will find the whole list of our programs. Start our business plan, our business starts, our fiscal starts in April. So you're going to find very soon in January, all the events populated.
Absolutely. And I connected with you on LinkedIn, but it's still pending. You haven't accepted it yet. I'm sure you will accept it.
I'll think about it.
I know you like me.
Of course.
Or at least I have the hunch you like me. I don't know. You like
me. Of course. Of course. Sorry.
No, thank you for that. I appreciate it. And so if somebody wants to connect to Mauricio and they can't find him, Mauricio and I will be connected in a few seconds here. Just hit me up. I'll do an introduction to Mauricio if you're interested, and we'll take it from there. Mauricio, before I close the conversation, any last comments?
No, just simply fortunate to have come to Canada. I came, you and I came during a recession. I came in 1991 as an adult. And so we're grateful for what we have received. I think we cannot forget to give back.
Absolutely. And that's why I do what I do.
I see that.
No, I appreciate it. I've learned a lot. I've grew a lot. And Canada afforded me what my home country will never be able to afford me, a good life, good opportunity, and a place for me to grow as an individual and as a family. And I'm really thankful for what this country has offered me.
And I'm really thankful for your time today.
Well, I really appreciate your time with me, Mauricio. You're welcome back on the channel anytime. Maybe we just do one like post CES. And just so I want to get your feedback on CES. I used to go to CES. Now I don't do it anymore, but I'd love to get your feedback. What did you guys see there? And I'll tell you some stories when we record this one. Some good stories.
Thank you, Robin.
I really appreciate it. For the audience, thank you so much for listening in. Hopefully that was fun for you. It was fun for me and Mauricio. We shared a few laughs. We reconnected, and I appreciate your time with me. I'll see you at the next episode. And thank you for listening in and watching us on YouTube. Much appreciate it. Mauricio, stick around. Don't close the browser yet.
Okay.